Sounds True presents How to Meditate with Tibetan Buddhist nun and teacher Pema Chodron. How to Meditate was recorded live on retreat at Gampo Abbey in Nova Scotia, Canada, over the course of a 5-week meditation program. And now session one, How to Meditate with Pema Chodron.
So for the next few weeks, we'll be having, on Tuesday mornings, we'll be having a meditation class. And each week, I will be presenting pretty much the same meditation technique, but from different angles. And so what I mean by different angles is that each week we'll be stressing a different intention. And this is one of the things that I particularly want to emphasize during this class, which is that at the beginning of each meditation session, we have a very clear intention of what it is we are doing during that particular session. So what I mean by that hopefully will become clear this morning. So each class will be emphasizing a different aspect of meditation. And also at the end of each class, I intend to give an assignment, something like a weekly assignment, to work on during the week in post-meditation. So what I'm hoping is that what we work with in the Tuesday class, you will work with all week long in your morning meditation and your evening meditation. And that in terms of the post-meditation assignment, which will be on somewhat the same subject as the weekly class, that you will do that during the week. So that it isn't just a Tuesday morning thing, it's something that then you work with for a week, and then we go on to emphasize something else. Now, what I'm hoping to come out of this is that you begin to realize that you have a lot of ability to work with your mind in any way that seems appropriate to you at the moment, which is to say that if your mind is very wild, you have a sense of how to work with the wild mind, and maybe you have a number of ways to work with it. If your meditation is very harsh and tense, you have some idea how to work with that harshness and that tenseness, how to lighten it up. If you are finding that when you sit down to meditate, you're very spaced out and you're very, it feels like you're just wandering around, not particularly doing anything, you know how to sharpen up, how to balance that over-casualness with more sense of discipline. If your meditation is a very drowsy, you have some sense of how to work with that. So what I'm getting at here is that you work with a meditation instructor. This is a very important aspect because you get feedback and you get support. But essentially, your meditation instructor doesn't have a clue what's going on in your mind. He or she only knows what you tell them, and maybe they are sensitive and they pick up some other things as well. But the basic point is that you're the only one who really knows what is happening with you at any moment of time. As it says in the Lojong slogans, there's one that says, of the two witnesses, trust the principal one. And the commentary on this slogan is that a lot of other people will give you good advice, and that can be extremely helpful. But basically, you're the only one who really knows what's going on. You're the principal witness, and you have to begin to be able to trust your own sense of insight into your own mind at any given moment. So the idea here is that we need to become our own meditation instructors, as well as working with a mentor, with someone else. It's very important that we become our own meditation instructors as well, because in any given meditation session, or at any time during the day, you're the only one who knows whether you're spaced out or too tense or too harsh or wandering all over the place or caught up in kleshas, you're the only one who really knows what's going on. You're the only one who knows, for instance, what mood you're in. You're the only one who knows what thoughts you're thinking. You're the only one. You're the only one who knows how much spaciousness you feel, how much peacefulness you feel, how much settledness you feel. So I hope that's clear. I'm hoping in this class that you gather some confidence in being able to connect with your own mind at any given moment, on the cushion or at any time during the day. Your thoughts and emotions become extremely, accessible to you. And that you know how to work with that. You have tools to work with that. And that you have confidence in that. That you can work with your mind. And then the post-meditation assignments or exercises or whatever you want to call them will be a complement for the sitting practice. So it's a way to work with the same things off the cushion. So today, the subject is going to be stability. We're going to work with meditation today. It's not going to be anything new, really, in terms of what you're going to hear in terms of meditation technique, except sometimes when it's pointed out to you, a certain emphasis, it clarifies things. So today the emphasis is going to be on stability. So in other words, when you begin to meditate, I'm going to emphasize that your intention is to stabilize your mind. At another time it might be on Maitri, another week. Or in another week it might be on not believing everything you think. In other words, listening to the content of your thoughts and being able to not get so hooked by your thoughts. Or one of the other weeks, it might be on resting the mind in its natural state, more sense of connecting with spaciousness or the gaps or the openness. Or the theme might be relaxation. There's different ways that you can begin a session, but today we're going to be working with stability. So as I present this class, it's going to be pretty much, we'll be meditating for the morning in fairly short sessions and with an intention, a specific intention. Today it will be stability. And I'll begin the class with a short talk on view, some aspect of how to regard what you're actually doing here. Today, in terms of view, I want to say something about suffering. Favorite subject. The Dharma, whether it's the teachings, in other words, our study, or whether it's the practice, our meditation, the intention of Dharma is to remove suffering. And maybe that's why so many people are attracted to meditation, because generally people don't even find themselves sitting in the meditation posture if they don't have something that's bothering them. But the Buddhist teachings are not about only removing the symptoms of suffering, but actually removing the cause of suffering. So the Buddha said, I teach only one thing, suffering and the cessation of suffering. So this is very interesting, and in terms of the cause of suffering, those of you who have studied this subject know that generally a teaching is given on ego, or a belief in a separate self, or a solid self, or a permanent self, or a self that feels itself as being separate from the whole, that is actually the root cause of suffering. But today, I want to emphasize that the root of suffering is mind, our mind. And also the root of happiness is our mind. But since the subject is suffering, I think this is very interesting that the root of suffering is our mind. Now, Shantideva says in the Bodhicaryavatara, in talking about this subject at length, he gives a famous metaphor or analogy, which is a great one. Basically, he's referring to the fact that if the earth, when you walk on the earth, if it's hurting your feet, he says to cover all the earth with hides of leather, where could such an amount of leather be found? But simply wrap a bit of leather around your feet, and it's as if the whole world was covered and you're protected. So that's a way of saying that you could endlessly try to have suffering cease by dealing with outer circumstances. And that is our, that's usually what all of us do. It's certainly what I do. It is the usual approach. You just try to solve the outer problem again and again and again. And the Buddha said something quite revolutionary, actually, which I feel that most of us don't really buy. And that is that if you work with your mind, that will alleviate all the suffering that seems to come from the outside. You have to really think about this, because I'm sure between now and next Tuesday morning, a few things will come up. When something comes up that bothers you, I challenge you, actually, that during the course of this little class that we're going to be doing, that each week you reaffirm your intention to actually explore the truth of this. When something is bothering you, a person is bugging you, a situation is irritating you, or physical pain is bothering you, to work with your mind. To work with your mind. And test this theory, or this teaching of the Buddha, which says that if we work with our mind, that's the only place that suffering will cease. And if we work with our mind, that's the only place that actually we'll begin to feel happy and contented with the world that we live in. So I'm just going to leave it at that, because this is a long subject, but I think I'd like to just challenge you to begin to work with your mind with whatever comes up and see what you discover. See what you discover. This would say that with something that's bothering you, that you give it your full attention is really the main point. That you're completely present with the thoughts that are being churned out about this particular irritating or unpleasant situation, and that you're completely present with the mood and energy and quality of unpleasantness that you feel. Staying present. Now, something that's an important distinction here is this word suffering that I'm using, and that the Buddha referred to when he said, my only thing I teach is suffering and the cessation of suffering. This is the word dukkha. And actually, it's different from pain. According to the teachings of the Buddha, pain is an inevitable part of a human life, as well as pleasure. Pain and pleasure alternate, and they're just part and parcel of anybody who has a body and a mind and lives and is born into this world. And so he didn't say that I teach of only one thing, pain and the cessation of pain. In fact, he said pain is, you have to grow up to the fact, mature to the fact, relax to the fact that there will be pain in your life. You're not going to reach the point where if someone you love dies that you don't feel grief. And you're not going to reach the point where if you fall down a flight of stairs, you're not bruised and you don't hurt a lot, and your back doesn't hurt and your knees don't hurt. Those things will happen. In fact, certainly at the stage of even quite realized people, they still have moods. The quality of energy moving through in terms of darker, heavier, more oppressive energy that we call depression or fear or anxiety, those kind of mood energies run through all beings, just the way the famous analogy is, it's just like weather. Just as the weather changes from day to day, especially here, so internally, ourselves, our internal weather is shifting and changing all the time, whether we're fully enlightened or not. But the question is, how do we work with that? Do we completely identify with that and get carried away with that and dragged down by that? Or is there just being present? So dukkha is different from pain. And dukkha is actually also translated as dissatisfaction or never satisfied. And one of its main characteristics is it is kept alive and fueled by continually being dissatisfied with the reality of the human condition, which is being continually dissatisfied with the fact that pleasant and unpleasant situations are part and parcel. And so there's a strong tendency on the part of all living beings to want to have the pleasant, agreeable, comfortable, secure feelings be all pervasive, and always going for that, and feeling somehow on that if there's pain in any form, disagreeable, uncomfortable, insecure, that we want to run away from that, we want to avoid that. And somehow this very simple dynamic of being pushed around and turned around all the time by trying to escape pain and get comfortable. And this is what causes this, what's called dukkha, or the suffering, or the dissatisfaction. This is what causes it. So what we do with our meditation, and also our study is about the same subject, is really about learning to be present, learning to be fully and completely present with pain, with pleasure, with what we experience as agreeable or disagreeable. This is our path. It's like realizing, being very mature and awake to the fact that the terrain in which we are waking up is rough as well as smooth, is churned up as well as calm, is freezing cold as well as boiling hot, is warm as well as cool, is sour as well as sweet. I'm just trying to get at the fact that the terrain in which we're doing this work is varied, complete, has many variations. So one of the teachings of the Buddha, which has always resonated with me a lot, is, I want to say this, and I'll probably say it in other classes too, because I'm hoping that gradually this will become a kind of a theme of these classes, but he said, when asked to give a kind of pith instruction on what it would be like to live free of the tyranny of ego clinging, or in other words, in another way of asking the question is, what would it feel like to be enlightened? And his answer was, in the hearing, there is merely the hearing. In the seeing, there is merely the seeing. In the thinking, there is merely the thinking. In the sensing, there is merely the sensing. Do you understand? We see, we hear, we think, we sense, we have feelings and emotions, but there doesn't have to be this strong sense of I see, I hear, I feel, my emotions, my thoughts. So it's leading in that direction, and the way that we move in that direction of being able to simply see, simply hear, simply think, thoughts passing through, emotions coming and going, simply sensing. The way we move in that direction is by training in being present. Interestingly enough, that's actually the method, is to train in being present. So let's right now, I'm not particularly going to give an instruction in meditation at this moment. I'm just going to say right now, in terms of working with your mind right in this moment, let's just see where you're at right now. So sit in meditation posture. And this is going to be more of just a reflection. I'm just going to ask you some questions just to see how much at this present moment as we begin this class, where you're at in being able to contact your mind, being able to be aware of what's happening in this very moment. So the first question is, what are you feeling? Can you be present with that? Can you just contact what you're feeling? It could be your mood or your physical body or just a quality of drowsiness or peacefulness, or agitation, physical pain, anything. Can you contact that? Can you contact that non-verbally, in just a sense of what you're feeling? Can you be present with that? To refine this question a little bit, right now, are there any emotions? Can you be present to that? Any emotions? You become distracted, can you just keep coming back to just being in touch with any emotions or feelings that you're having right now in this present moment? We're not talking about having to name anything or following the history or anything like that, just being present to what you're feeling right now. Are there any physical sensations right now? Can you be present with that? Any physical sensations? Pain, tightness, relaxation? What about thoughts? is the quality of your thoughts right now? Is your mind very busy? Is it quite drowsy? Is it actually surprisingly still? Just can you be present to the thoughts, the sort of quality of your mind right now? Raging or peaceful or dull? Obsessing? If I were to ask you personally right now, what is the quality of your mind at this moment, whether it's still or wild or dull, whatever it might be, what would you say? All right, stop for a minute. So, it's recommended that whenever you sit down to meditate, first thing you do is to settle. And settling means that you sort of come into the room, you just here completely as you can be, and you check in, you have a sense of being here and knowing what you brought in with you. Often, you know, maybe we've been sitting very quietly since breakfast, just looking out at the ocean, and so we actually come back into here quite settled and still. Other times, maybe we rushed around the entire time. We gobbled down our breakfast and ran up and down the stairs, and we come in all wound up. Maybe something happened since breakfast or last night or recently that has you all worried and upset and you're just churned up. And maybe you're really tired, so you feel like you're hardly here. You feel so dull and the sense of sinking. One thing we can say for sure is whenever you come in here and sit down, you bring something along, you know. So the idea isn't to just plunk down and then just the bell goes and you just kind of like start out. First, settle and have some sense of where you're at. So that's the first question. The reason we just did that little exercise was, were you able to be present enough to even know what you were feeling physically or what your mood was or what was the quality of your mind? And the point here is there's not a good way to come in and a bad way to come in. We're not saying it's preferable to come in all calm because you've been looking at the ocean as opposed to being completely churned up. Might feel preferable, but really you have to understand that meditation is about being awake and present to whatever is going on. So you really can't critique your meditation in terms of good and bad. The only thing you can say is, was I present or not? And even that, to say that I wasn't present, is a result of the fact that you've been meditating is because you know that for the whole time you were away, there's some sense of awareness about what is happening. And then, of course, you train again and again in staying present. But it's not about criticizing your performance or having an ideal that you're trying to measure up to. This is actually very important. The idea is to be very awake and know what is happening. And then over the years, you continue to apply the techniques, and in that way, you gradually become more and more present. That means not only present to our confusion, but also more and more sense of being wide awake. It can be like when the winds are howling around here. We can feel that inside our body, that sense of the winds moving around and we're all churned up, but you're completely there with it. It's not carrying you off. You're not getting hooked. And then when you do get hooked, you know it, and you can acknowledge that and come back. So it's a growing wakefulness about what actually is going on. So in this way, when things are bothering you on the outside, you work with your mind. You work with being completely present to the thoughts that are fueling the dissatisfaction, the obsessive thoughts, or the denial, the what's that word, where you absolutely kind of disappear, disassociating. Your approach is to just numb out when things are unpleasant. There's more and more awareness of what is actually happening, and you stay present with your thoughts so that you know what you're doing, and you know the quality of the mood. And really, it's training in not getting hooked and seeing when you do get hooked, training in being present with whatever is happening, rather than trying to always solve the outer situation, actually working with your mind, calming your mind in this sense of staying present to even the turmoil that might be churned up in you. So the main thing to understand is that this word dukkha, or suffering, that the meditation relates to, that meditation leads to the cessation of dukkha. One of the most important things about dukkha is it's kept alive for your entire life by ignorance, never knowing what's really going on. Just a sense of unhappiness or churned up or something, but very vague, and it's sort of propelling you always to try to, either through saying something or doing something or thinking something, trying to get out of that place. And so the discomfort or the sense of dissatisfaction just is continually being strengthened as you go through your life. So meditation is really a process of staying present, and it definitely is a process of dissolving slowly over time that deep ignorance that we carry with us. You really do know what's happening. So before we actually get into meditating this morning, I want to just say one other thing is, for today, and probably for next week too, I'm not sure exactly when this will start to shift, but we're only going to work with shamatha. And I want to make this very clear. Shamatha is a practice of stabilizing the mind, training the mind to be present. And the way that this is done is you develop the capacity of the mind to place the mind on an object and stay there as much as you can, and notice when you wander off and continue to come back to the object. And as you know, we generally work with the breath as the object. But placing the mind on the object is really the backbone of the shamatha practice. But shamatha doesn't really have anything to do particularly with curiosity or actually exploring or the curious or aware quality of mind. Shamatha is about stabilizing the mind. It's about learning to be present. Not so much learning, but bringing out the natural quality of mind to be able to stay present. And then as mind begins to be present more and more, has the capacity to be present in meditation and in post-meditation, then this quality of awareness, the aware quality of the mind, the awake quality of the mind, the curious quality of the mind, comes out more and more. Now, it's not like you can repress your curiosity or your awareness or something. You have that already. But you should understand that shamatha is about stabilizing the mind, training the mind to stay present. And then on the basis of that, to the degree that you're fully present, to that degree, more and more of this wakefulness or awareness or curiosity begins to come out more and more. And that's called vipassana. It's usually referred to as insight. You begin to have more and more insight. But you really can't have that insight or that curiosity to any great degree if the mind is just wandering all over the place and you're completely ignorant and confused about what's happening in any given moment. So training the mind to stay present is what we're going to be working on, different aspects of shamatha. So this morning, it's the kind of most basic quality of shamatha, which is stabilizing. So what I'm going to say now, there'll be a little introduction, and I'd like you please to follow this instruction for the rest of the week in your morning meditation sessions. So first of all, when you sit down, just settle and be here. Even before you completely set up your posture and everything, just settle a little bit and be here, which is what I was talking about before. Come into the room, sit down, and have a sense of being here and what it is you're carried in with you. Physical feelings, moods, state of your mind. Take a while to settle and just be here. Then be very clear about when you're actually going to start meditating. So start with awareness. It's almost like saying to yourself, now I'm going to begin. You don't actually have to articulate that. But be very clear that you're starting, so that there's a sense like, now you're beginning your meditation. And let your intention be very clear. Today the intention is to stabilize the mind. So this is to say, we're going to place the mind on an object. That object is going to be the breath. And when the attention goes off, we're going to come back to the breath. The intention there is to stabilize the mind by continually coming back to placing the mind on an object, noticing when the mind wanders off, coming back again to placing the mind on the object. So that's going to be the intention, is to stabilize the mind. And the way that we do that is by always coming back, noticing when we've gone off, coming back. So sit down, take a while to settle in and just be here, and then be very clear. Start with awareness. Realize when you're starting. And let your intention be clear. And so you could say the intention is to just keep coming back. Just keep coming back. Just keep coming back to the breath. And why am I doing that? I'm doing that to stabilize my mind, which is to say, training my mind in being fully present. Training my mind in being fully present. That's the intention. We call it stabilizing. So today I'm going to give instruction as if it were for the first time. First you go through your posture, and basically you have a nice stable base. Sometimes that's called a flat bottom, but it's basically just a stable base. And people are sitting on different things. Some people are flat, some people are on gomdens, some on zafus. Sometimes people sit in chairs. It's a sense of being well balanced, a good base. And then the hands, generally speaking, are in the resting the mind mudra, which is just resting on your thighs. And that's actually interesting. If the hands are what you might call too far back on the thighs, then it pulls your body out of alignment, which can add up to be stressful and painful. Also, if they're too far forward, it pulls your body out of alignment. So you have to personally find the place where your hands rest, where it makes you feel well aligned, so that the torso is upright and comfortable, and it's not going forward or backward. So where you place your hands, it actually can make a difference to your physical comfort. Then an alternate posture could be the Zen mudra, but where the one palm is over the other, and you make like a little oval, and the thumbs almost touch, but not quite. And you don't let that sit down in your lap, you hold it up a little bit. And this particular mudra is actually extremely helpful if you're really drowsy, because you have to have a little more awareness, because you're holding it up a little bit, and the thumbs aren't quite touching, and it keeps collapsing when you fall asleep or doze off, so it kind of keeps you more alert. So in terms of being your own meditation instructor, you can work with the hands. You can use the Zen mudra if that to wake yourself up, or you may just prefer that one, or just the resting the mind mudra. But be aware that where you place your hands can make a difference in terms of how, particularly tension in your back and shoulders. So there's the seat and the hands. And then the torso, what's usually said is an open front and a strong back. But always with any of these things, particularly when we're talking about the torso, relaxation as much as possible, to be upright but relaxed. But I was always taught that to visualize as if there was a straight line from the top of my head that went straight down into the cushion, and that if I had a sense that that straight line was tilting forward or bending over or crooked, then I would just lift up again. And also I was often given the instruction to have a sense of as if there was an imaginary string at the top of your head that was sort of lifting you up. And that's actually can be quite helpful and bring a feeling of lightness to the body and relaxation. But one has to be careful that one's shoulders don't then lift up too. So be aware of your shoulders, and sometimes you can actually purposely lift them and then drop them down. That's an old yoga trick. But that can help to sort of relax shoulders. A lot of us have the tendency to tighten in our shoulders. Sometimes it's also said, keep the heart open. Keep the heart area open. So when we get tired, we tend to hunch over and close down in the front of our body, whether we're doing meditation or just sitting in the library or at our desk or in lunch or whatever. So there's a sense of lifting up. And it's said in terms of how the winds move through your body that if your posture is upright, then your mind can settle much more easily. So the seat and the hands and the torso. Then the eyes. I notice some of you are meditating with eyes closed. I'd like you to meditate with your eyes open. Even if you're used to meditating with eyes closed, open the eyes, because actually it's a part of this wakefulness. We're not internalizing, we're not going in. It's not a transcendental type meditation where you're trying to go into special states of consciousness, but it's a meditation that trains you to be completely open to life and to all the qualities of life or anything that might come along. It's a training in a kind of ultimate equilibrium or equanimity, which is not based on the outer circumstances being still, but on the mind being able to be flexible and open and being able to stay present with whatever is coming up on the outside or on the inside. Whether it's churned up emotions or difficult outer circumstances, being able to stay present with what's happening. So the eyes being open is actually demonstrates that. But the eye gaze is downward about 4 to 6 feet in front, so that's to allow some stability. And again, I leave it to you. You should know that if your mind is very wild and you're wanting to be more stable, experiment with eye gaze being very close. The head doesn't bend over. The head, it's always as if you were looking at straight ahead, but the eye gaze can be quite close in, as if looking right down your nose. Sometimes that's actually very helpful. So you should experiment with the different eye gazes, and right now I'm just going to give you two. Either a very close eye gaze or the 4 to 6 feet in front. And I'm not now going to give you a more raised eye gaze, but just you can experiment with one of those two and see if in any particular meditation period it doesn't help you to use one or the other. Sometimes tight might be better, sometimes the more raised eye gaze might be better. But in any case, it's somewhat downward to allow you to be less distracted. But you will see colors, and you will see movement, and you will be aware of the light in the room and so forth, and that's intentional. I don't know if anybody has problems with asking about, like, seeing things and so forth, but you can tell me when we have a little discussion. But generally speaking, it's just a short, soft focus. The object of meditation is nothing visual. The object of meditation is your breath. So the seat, your seat is flat, your hands, your eyes. And then your face, the mouth can be slightly open, just slightly open so that the air can move equally between the nose and the mouth, but it's not wide open. Another person wouldn't really even know that your mouth was open, but it's slightly open. This is actually quite helpful too because it relaxes your jaw. And then I forgot a very important one, which is the legs. So the legs are crossed just comfortably in front of you. Sometimes people need to raise their seat because their legs don't go down and they need a higher seat. Sometimes they can sit completely flat. But you don't want your knees to be higher than your waist because that will really cause you a lot of pain. Also, I'd like us to work with just two leg postures, the sitting comfortably as possible with the legs crossed in front, or you can do what's called the resting posture. The resting posture is that you actually put your legs up like this and hold them like that. And that's so that you don't get into a struggle with extreme pain in your legs. You can use the resting posture. But those are the only two to use, so that there's some discipline here and some form. So in other words, don't put your legs behind you. But when you do the resting posture, we haven't gotten to the technique yet, but you're working with mindfulness of breath. You just continue with the technique, but you just rest your body a bit. You don't put your head down on your knees, and you don't crunch over. You still keep a upright posture, but you can release the pain in the knees or the ankles or something by taking the resting posture if you wish. And then when you feel ready, you go back to cross-leg posture. So anytime during a meditation session, you can always, what Trungpa Rinpoche used to call, flash back to your sense of being, which is flash back or come back into awareness of your body. And these 6 points of posture are the seat, in other words, a sort of well-stabilized seat, sitting position, not tilting forward or backward, but nice base for an upright posture. So the seat, the legs, and the torso, the hands, the eyes, and the mouth. So these 6 are, you can just go through them. Seat, legs, torso, hands, eyes, mouth. Every once in a while you can just do that if you find that helpful. But in any case, you should run through it at the beginning of a session. All right, now stop again. You've come in, you've sat down, and you've settled. And settling merely means just being aware of what you've brought in with you. And sort of being really conscious of your state of mind, not with criticism of it or anything like that. That's quite important. It doesn't have anything to do with a critique. It's just like you're doing a scientific experiment where you're supposed to write down your state of mind or your mood or something, and just kind of objectively. So I'm not going to suggest you write down your state of mind, but this is the idea. It's not a critique like, oh, bad me, I have this wild mind. Or it's just noticing. And actually expecting the mind to be all different kinds of ways. I think we experience every nuance of mind just the way we experience all the different kinds of weather. So come in, settle, and just be here. And that can be also a chance to sort of like relax a little bit, you know. And then the next thing is to run through your posture. And then you'll actually start working with breath and thoughts. So again, if you need to just stand up and stretch a little bit, then we're going to start again. And I'd like you to actually stand up so that there's a sense of freshness as we begin this. But stand up and do whatever you need to do to make yourself more comfortable, but do it with a lot of awareness or a sense of being fully present to standing, stretching, and also awareness if you're feeling any mood things or like that, you know, irritation that I'm talking so much. Sense of sadness or well-being, just to sort of, as you're standing there, just some sense of being present, contacting the present moment. And when you do sit down again, the emphasis is going to be just to settle, go through your posture, and then be clear that you're starting when you start. I can't overemphasize how important this is, that there's a real sense of beginning, like now I'm beginning. So you allow yourself some time to come in and settle, and then you have a sense, I'm beginning, and you also have a sense of your intention. So the intention this morning will be to train the mind in staying present. And so what do you do? How do you do that? You place the mind on an object, and that is the breath. And when the attention wanders off, you come back to that object. This is a classical way of training the mind to stay fully present, stabilizing the mind. And this is the essence of shamatha. Shamatha is called calm abiding because when you're fully present, there's some sense of calm, not in the sense of that you always feel calm, but that you feel fully here. And it has a sense of, I'm not sure calm is quite the right word, but a sense of fully present is a very strong sense of well-being in a way, even if what you're fully present to is churned upness. All right, now sitting down again. Excuse me for being repetitive, but I'm hoping that you will all remember this, that it will be very clear, and that for the rest of the week you can work with this. So you've come in, you've settled, you've run through your posture, you feel ready to start, and then you start with awareness, and you're clear on what your intention is. So the intention today is to stay fully present, to stabilize the mind. So now I'm going to talk about the breath as the object of meditation and what to do when thoughts arise. So this will be a guided meditation. First, I'll ring the gong. When I ring the gong, I'll just settle run through your posture, and then begin to feel the breath as it goes in and out, or if you prefer, just the out breath, because if you're very used to that, it's fine to do that. But what I want you to do is to really work with being able to feel the breath going in and out. The word concentration on the breath would be actually the wrong word. This is not concentrating on the breath. This is feeling the breath as it goes in and out. Trungpa Rinpoche used to say, be one with the breath as it goes in and out. But actually, you have to find your own word that describes this. I was giving meditation instruction to a young woman, and I was describing this to her, and she used the word allowing the breath to go in and out. And I thought that was very good. But what you want to get at is it's not you looking at this breath or concentrating on this breath. It's more of a sense of breathing in and breathing out, letting yourself be breathed in and out, however you want to express this oneness with the breath. So it can be the breath going in and the breath going out, or it can be the breath going out and then less emphasis as you breathe in, and then more sense of emphasizing the outwardness or the expansiveness. But in either case, the sense of feeling it or being with it or allowing it or breathing it in and out. So please work with this. And just do this over and over, placing your mind on an object. And of course, the breath is used for many reasons, but one excellent reason is because it's impermanent, it's always changing, it's flowing, it's not a stable thing. And so in that way, you're feeling something rather than concentrating on something. And you're also developing your mind, training your mind to be able to stay present to the impermanence of things, impermanence of thoughts, impermanence of emotions, impermanence of sights and sounds, that things don't stay stable. So, feeling the breath going in and out.